Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Heidi Moore from The Guardian, in for Charlie Herman. And I'm joined today by our regular contributors, Joe Nocera with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine. Our first topic is pharmaceuticals and how much they cost. Since the human genome was sequenced 10 years ago, personalized medicine has started to catch fire. But how much personalization can we take? Pharmaceutical companies are now developing drugs for so-called orphan diseases, which only affect a small sliver of the population. It sounds great, but there's a potential problem: the cost. Some of these drugs cost $1,000 a pill, or even more. So, Joe, who bears the brunt of this new breed of expensive drugs? The insurance company, or is it us as consumers?
Well, ultimately, of course, it is us as consumers. But the way it's working now is you take a drug like, to name one, Kalydeco, which it sounds more like a children's toy than a drug, but it's actually an important breakthrough drug for people who have cystic fibrosis. And for a certain sliver of people with this disease, it really helps them a lot. But it costs $300,000 a year. But since there's only a few thousand people who can be helped with this particular drug, the insurance companies, by and large, have been picking up the tab. The real problem comes, you know, when we get to the point where it's not just a drug for cystic fibrosis, but much more common drugs that have these same price points. What's happening in the world of pharma right now is that new drugs coming on the market in all sorts of areas like cancer and not just orphan diseases, but broader diseases as well, are being priced at enormous sums of money.
So what does this mean for the drug companies?
Well, for the drug companies, this is nirvana. They've run out of sort of blockbuster-type drugs like Lipitor. They really aren't a whole lot of those anymore. And so these new personalized drugs allow them to continue to have big revenue streams. And the thing about it is nobody's complaining about it yet. Because Wall Street loves it, the shareholders love it, the patients really love it, you know, and the cost so far has not been enough to really burden the system. But that's where we could be headed.
Right. So it's enough to make you long for socialized medicine. Rana, I mean, how does Europe handle this? This is a big policy issue.
I always long for socialized medicine. I lived in Europe actually for 10 years, and I had both of my children on the British national healthcare system. And I do think that this debate over $300,000 a year drugs really is forcing a conversation that Europeans have already had about how you divvy up healthcare resources in the most equitable way. And the way that, of course, that it's done in Europe is that you have free maternity care, or I should say taxpayer paid for maternity care. Everyone can have their teeth fixed. You know, everyone gets good emergency room coverage. But procedures that take longer and aren't emergency procedures, a hip replacement, let's say, and certainly personalized medicine and very expensive drugs are not paid for by the state. But you have overall health outcomes that are actually superior, by and large, to the U.S., where you have a much more bifurcated system. We've got the absolute best healthcare in the world if you're rich. Not so much so for everybody else.
Okay, so let's talk now about a situation that involves a sick country, not sick people. Let's talk about what's happening in Argentina. It's this absolutely amazing situation. The country defaulted on $13 billion in debt on Wednesday, and its boyish finance minister held a long press conference saying that hedge funds were forcing extortion on the country. Rana, let's unwrap this. What happened, and how did Argentina get to that point?
So this is a story that actually began about 13 years ago. When Argentina had a major financial crisis, the country was about to go under, it was defaulting on its debt, and it was able to negotiate certain terms with creditors. Now, at that point, there were a number of hedge funds and big banks and various international creditors that were pushing to be paid back in full. The country could not do that, so it negotiated very much reduced terms, and some of the creditors took those terms. terms, you know, just getting a few cents on the dollar back, thinking that they were doing well to get that. Others, like American hedge funder Paul Singer, decided to hold out for 100% of their money. And they've been in courts suing ever since. And so here we are today, and you have an American court ruling that Argentina really does have to pay back 100% of its debts to creditors. Now, the question is, as it goes into default, is it going to have to do that? Can the U.S. courts force this this outcome? And if they don't, what are the financial impacts for Argentina? The question is, if they go into default now without negotiating terms with their creditors that can allow them to pay out on in a way that they are able to, do they go even deeper into recession or depression? Do they have runaway inflation? And what happens on the ground there? And that outcome is still unknown, frankly. But the case has big ramifications for how countries go bankrupt in the future.
The interesting part of this as well is that Argentina is in a little bit of denial, possibly. Argentinian officials have had some really strong words. They've accused Standard & Poor's, which downgraded the country, of favoritism. They said the court-appointed mediator was not impartial. They don't really seem to be accepting the decisions of the available authorities. And that's, of course, beside the contempt that they have shown for hedge funds. So is there anyone to blame for Argentina's troubles?
Well, on some level, Argentina's problems have been brought on by Argentina. They had, you know, fairly poorly drawn contractual relationships that allowed these holdouts to hold out and demand 100%. The other, you know, it's also true, though, that countries, unlike companies, can't file for bankruptcy. So a bankruptcy court would have taken care of this. You wouldn't have holdouts if a company was bankrupt, because the debt would be settled, a judge would agree, everybody would have to go along with it. Here you have a sovereign nation, you know, fighting in a U.S. federal district court over how much it should pay back. And so you can sort of understand why Argentina would have its back up, saying, how dare you, federal court, tell us, a sovereign nation, who to pay back and how much to pay back. And meanwhile, the court is saying, well, we're just trying to hold you to your contractual obligations.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at wnyc.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast. It's available on iTunes. Joe Nocera with The New York Times and Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Heidi Moore, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.